Listen. That's the sound of time ticking away. Every second counts, you know. So get off your hands and do something about it.
Hello and welcome to Podcast 18. In this podcast, we are going to be exploring whether you need to have a studio. Hello all, I'm Paul Wilkinson from MasteringPortraitPhotography.com. It's the second, maybe the third time I've sat and recorded this podcast. I have got dreadful hay fever. I'm so sorry. I've spent most of the day entirely bunged up. It's just been a nightmare. And when I listened back to the previous two takes, it sounded so nasally. I was really struggling. It just sounded awful. However, I appear to have cleared my nose and my sinuses just for a moment. And do you know what cured it? Taking a wedding booking. How cool is that? I never knew that would work. We should market it to Benadryl. It's a much nicer thing because not only do you get incoming funds, but it also clears your hay fever. So I'm feeling much better now, and I'm going to have a third go at recording this podcast. Hopefully it all sounds all right. Hopefully I'm not sounding quite so nasally as I have been. Apologies if it still sounds a little bit on the thin side. So in this podcast, primarily we're going to be talking about whether you need a studio or not. It's a question we get asked quite a lot. And of course, it's an important one. But before that, let's just recap the week. It started really well with my nephew's birthday party. Just lovely. My nephew Spike is the cutest, most beautiful little boy. He's 3 years old. He's got big eyes and a big grin. And trust me, he can have anything he likes. But it was his birthday. Did I take a camera? Nope, I didn't take a camera because there were more cameras than kids, frankly. Many years ago, I stopped taking my camera to family parties. Rightly or wrongly, I do miss it. I miss the fact that I used to have racks and racks of family pictures. But most of them never got seen. They're all on our hard drives. They sit around. I haven't finished most of them. And someone once asked me, do I not feel like I'm hiding behind the camera? Shouldn't I not just experience the event? And frankly, occasionally I thought, no, I'd rather see it than experience it. But actually, no, that's not true. With family events, of course, I'd love to experience it. So these days now, no, I don't take the camera around nearly as much as I used to. But it was still wonderful. And my other two nephews were there as well, my brother's boys. Alex and Ben, and they're both exploring photography, which is wonderful. So we've lent both the boys cameras out of the studio, and it's great. It's great to watch them picking up the camera and exploring lenses, and I actually have something that I can have a conversation with a teenager that I actually understand, which is magical. So Alex in particular spent the day practicing with a 50mm 1.8 and my old Nikon D3X, which is a bit of a beast of a camera, but he'll get his head around it. So I am sure we're going to see some fantastic pictures from him. So wonderful, lovely to catch up with the family, and so good to see Spike. We've had three reveals here this week. Two weddings, which have been great and resulted in the most beautiful albums that are going to go out. And one portrait shoot. Of course, with the reveals, we do in-person sales here. So every reveal means one of us getting in front of the client, showing them their images, and then working out what frames they'd like to buy or what album they'd like us to design and make for them. It's the best bit in so many ways. I love the shooting, of course, but actually seeing your pictures are going to be used is just the thrill of it, really. Watching people's reactions, the tears, the laughter, the surprise sometimes. People don't think they're going to photograph that well. And on the whole, of course, they do. The studio's been full. Actually, it's been full all year, either with people on work placements, with people doing just visits with us for a while, just kind of sitting in and seeing what we do. And I love it. And we've also been doing some mentoring. I love mentoring. Or is it mentoring? No, mentoring. Definitely mentoring. I love it. I absolutely love it. It's a sort of the process of, I wouldn't say teaching. Teaching doesn't describe it. Not teaching. That's too strong. Acting's a sounding board, I suppose. It's a really useful thing. I enjoy being a mentor, but I also love having a mentor. So tomorrow we're off down to see my mentor. Can't wait. It's always good fun to see him. He's a lovely guy. He doesn't pull his punches, though. If he thinks my photography's not up to scratch, he will tell me. He'll tell me in no uncertain terms. And should that be the case, of course, I will share that with you next week as to what the outcome is. But really looking forward to that. And I've been mentoring a few people around over time. And I find that actually being a mentor is just as important as having a mentor and just as useful and productive. Just the process of going through images and looking at different finishes and composition and styling and posing and production, cropping, just everything about creating images. As you explore that with others, you can feel your own ideas forming as well. And as you go through images, you think, oh, do you know what? That's a great idea. I'll use that. Or I look at that and think, actually, on that image, that doesn't work that well, but I know it's something that I do, so possibly I should stop doing that too. Because when you're looking at someone else's images, the process is so much more objective. It's so much more separate from when you're doing your own. And when we're doing our own images, now I'm in an interesting process this week. It is that time of the year when we start to think about doing competitions. Deadlines are all coming up. And for once, for many years, it'll be the first time I've been in a position where I can enter some images too. For the past few years, I've either been chair of the MPA, or I've been chair of the region, or I've been a judge. And in those positions, you can't actually enter your own images because it would just be a conflict of interest, really. And even if there was absolutely nothing in it, it was completely anonymous. If you did do well, of course, people would still say, oh, you know, he was a judge. He was the chair. They had to do well just because it was him. And I just didn't need any of that rubbish. So I stood away from doing competitions for about 4 years, 5 years. And this is my first time back into it in that time. And the interesting thing is the MPA have opened up the deadlines from being 1 year prior to the deadline. So any image that's younger than 2 years can be entered. Well, that's quite a big catalogue to go through. And we've been going through it all week. And it's surprising, firstly, how hard that is to be objective. I'm a judge, you know, I should know, but you don't. When you're looking at your own images, you are so easily swayed by whether you liked the person in them, whether you enjoyed the shoot, whether it's an image that you really wanted to create at the time. There's a million factors. It's really hard to be objective. As well as the fact that now I'm looking at images that are 2 year old, I keep finding things I missed. Honestly, I went back to a shoot we shot about 18 months ago, and there's an image in there that was rejected completely, outright. We never, ever showed it to the person involved. It was actually a mastering portrait photography shoot, but this image was never shared. It was never shown. And yet I think it might well be the best image I photographed that day. Can you believe that? We missed an image. I don't know how we missed it, and it's just beautiful. And I love this process of going through our catalogues. Now, we don't delete any images here. You've heard me talk about this before. The cost of disk drives is so low, why would I? It's 3 terabyte, 85 quid. And if you share that amongst all of your clients, it's not that much money. So we keep every image, never get rid of them. And it's been great going back through those images and looking for little gems and little bits and pieces in there that are just wonderful. And this was one of them. But of course, trying to be objective is a nightmare. So I'm going to take this load. We've got a big box load of images, and I'm going to walk them down. I say walk them down. It's a long old drive to go see my mentor. We're going to sit and have a cup of tea or four and have a look to see whether there's anything in there that's worthy of entering competitions. Now, it's cutting it a little bit tight because one of the deadlines is, in fact, tomorrow night, come Tuesday morning. So I'm going to have to kind of work some magic to get those out of the door, but I just haven't had chance prior to that. And of course, I've been battling it out with a printer that's got clogged print nozzles, and I've been running the cleaning cycle on it so much that I've now filled the maintenance cartridge on it. And it's just one of the, you know, that kind of nightmare. But I'd stocked up on supplies, and hopefully we will be able to get through it. The other thing we did this week, we had another mastering portrait photography shoot, which was in Oxford and with Dory. Those of you who've tracked our work will know Dory is somebody I met a couple of years ago now in a bar, of all places. I'm not one for normally asking people to come and work with me, but I'm getting the hang of it slowly, and I now do far more of it. And luckily for us, once people see our website, they generally would like to come and In fact, I've just done a wedding pitch, won the wedding, and in the process of that, the bride and the groom would both love to come and be models. And boy, are they beautiful. It'll be well worth getting them in as models. I'm really excited about that. But Dory, we met Dory and her sister and her husband and niece in Oxford City Centre, and we went looking for light and locations in this incredible university town, a university city. Just brilliant. We started out in sort of the old part of town around the Bodleian. So you've got old sandstone walls and hundreds of years of history. And we meandered our way all the way down onto Christchurch's gardens. Well, not gardens so much as the parkland at the bottom of Christchurch, which was great. It's nice and green and leafy. And then we went round the corner to the magistrate courts, because one of the things about working in a city is you have every type of variety you can imagine. There's always an old bit somewhere, and there's always new bits, and there's always run down bits, and there's always posh bits. And so we, to illustrate the kinds of light and shape and form you can use to create the most interesting photos, we kind of ducked around behind the magistrate court and into a little bit of town I'd never been to before. We were sort of making it up as we went along, and yet some of my favourite pictures are down there, where it's a little bit more modern, a little bit more mundane. If I'm honest, it's a little bit crappy, but the pictures are just great. Can't wait to show you this video for a number of reasons, one of which is we're going to try cutting this video in a slightly different way to some of the others. A little bit more creative on the video side. Sarah Plater is taking ownership a little bit more of what's being filmed, and it'll be quite interesting to see what comes out. I didn't create as many shots as normal, and yet we still spent ages because Sarah was filming little bits of cutaways, little details, while I was telling her kind of why I chose the positions and the locations for the light and the shape and the form of the images. Sarah was then creating video footage to support that. So it's going to be really exciting to see what that video turns out like. A little bit different to the others, hopefully a little bit more energetic, a little bit different for us anyway. So let's see how that goes. On that note, we are still heading towards Mastering Portrait Photography going live. It isn't live yet. Thanks for all the inquiries we've been getting based on the podcast, where people have tried to find out how they can join. You can't join just yet, as of the time of recording this video. So this is today. I'm recording this on Father's Day. I'm sitting here on Father's Day. It's not live yet, simply because we're debugging it. So we've had Taryn. Taryn's been in all week, a work placement student. She's been brilliant. Some of you will know her as one of our beta testers as well. And she's been going through the site sort of, I think she's been going through it letter by letter, judging by the issues she's raised. So there's a whole load of those to go through. And we're just closing out all of that detail and then making sure that the funding, the financial side of it is working correctly, so that when people pay, then it all works well and smoothly, and it's easy to join and easy to cancel if you want to, because that's, of course, is really, really important, that the customer experience is absolutely perfect. So bear with us a few more weeks yet, I think, but we're heading towards it now. We've getting to the point where there's so much content on there, we're all really itching to make the thing go live, which it will. So today's question was, one, we get asked these questions, so we keep a log of all the questions, but one of them we've got is, do you need to have a studio? So let me describe what I have, let me describe what I've had, and let me figure out whether it's something that you should do. So let me be honest, I do have a studio. It's not huge, but it's really capable. It's about 3 meters, 3.5 meters wide, about 6 meters long, and a couple of meters high. The configuration isn't ideal. We have a couple of structural tie bars that run through the middle of the studio across the middle of the room, which I'm forever crashing the lights into. So there are actually a couple of places I can't put lights. It's a pain, but it's not impossible. So it's big enough to do 4, 5, 6 people at a sitting. After that, I'd probably have to go out and rent somewhere. I can shoot 12 or so along the back wall, but that's really the only shot I can take. There isn't the depth in the studio to contain everyone within a paper background, but it does its job very well. And I love working in the studio. I absolutely adore it. And of course, with us, we have a garden outside that we use. We have the street here in Haddenham, and we have the studio that all are right next door to each other. And it means that I've always got a wet weather and a dry weather option. And usually, 9 times out of 10, if not higher, we will do both. We'll both go into the studio, we'll both go into the garden, and we may well go out to the street as well, because all of those yield different looks, different feels to the images. So we're pretty well set up like that. Prior to getting this studio, though, I had my garage next to the house, which is a big garage. It wasn't a double garage. It had a big door, but it wasn't quite two cars wide. Again, it was about 6 meters deep. I don't think this studio here is much deeper, but it was a bit narrower. But the thing with that studio was it had to do everything. So it was also our reveal room. Everything was on wheels. We bought industrial casters, or I bought industrial casters and screwed them to the bottom of the sofa, the TV, the cupboards. Everything was on wheels. They all locked, and we could turn the room around in about 10 minutes from shooting in the studio against a paper background with the lights to swinging the whole room around and being able to show someone images on the wall using a big projector and a screen. It wasn't great. And it was a little bit of a stress, if I'm honest, switching from one to the other. We had to kind of work as a team and swing the slot round, but we could do it. What we couldn't do was have a reveal and shooting going on at the same time, which was obviously a limiting factor. Also, when people walked up the drive to go to the studio, instantly they recognised it as a converted garage. And that wasn't ideal either. It was beautifully done. It was warm. It was cozy. Some of the best images I've ever taken were taken in there. So it was completely functional. But you still couldn't change the fact that if they're going to spend a couple of £1,000 on their wedding, for instance, they were still walking up our drive and going into a converted garage. And prior to that, when I first started out, we had no studio space. Before I converted it, I used to just take the lights out on location, the best known of which is the image that's on the cover of the book, Mastering Portrait Photography. That was shot way before I had a studio. At that time, I had one light. It was an Elinchrom BX400, I think. Oh, it might be an EL. No, it was an Elinchrom EL500, which was a tin can with sliders on the back, but it gave the most beautiful quality of light. The first modifier, honestly, the first modifier I bought was a 6-foot octa. Now, not the most practical thing to buy, and with hindsight, the wrong modifier to buy because we had nowhere to put it. I didn't have a studio. I used to try and set it up in the lounge, and our cottage is really low-ceilinged. The modifier, the octa, reached from the floor to the ceiling with the light broadly in the middle. But it's wonderful. The light off it is fantastic. And this particular client, so the little guy you see on the cover of our book, Ben, I did a family shoot in his garden with all of the kids, all of the family. And I had in the Land Rover with me, actually, I say Land Rover, back then it was my old Shogun. I had got the Octa, the single head, some cables and a stand and a bit of velvet. I carried at that time a little bit of velvet in the car. I don't know why, but I had some black velvet in the car. And at the end of this shoot, we've been running around the garden. The kids had had enough. And I said, look, why don't we try and get just a couple of more gentle pictures? Have you got somewhere I can set this up? And so they took me into their study. And again, fairly low-ceilinged. And the octa pretty much, it was higher than our cottage, but the octa pretty much filled floor to ceiling. Once it was set up, it was almost impossible to get out of the door. I wouldn't do this now, by the way, but I just wouldn't. But back then I was brave, I was young, I didn't care. And I set this thing up. Once it was set up, you could barely get out of the room. I pegged my black velvet to the curtains behind, and then I had each of the kids sit on a box that was in front of me, and I shot each of them a headshot or two. And Ben, who was really lively, he didn't want to sit down at all, and I was getting sort of tired and trying to figure out how I was going to get this shot. Remember that an Elinchrom EL500, I'm sure it's an EL500, doesn't cycle particularly quickly. It's quite a slow light. It's an old light. And so every time I shot it, I had to wait for it to catch up and beep, and then I'd take another shot. So I was running out of steam, I suppose. And eventually I said to Ben, oh God, look, Ben, look what your sister's doing with your toy car down on the floor. And he looked down, I hit the button, I had my shot. And that's the shot you see now on the cover of Mastering Portrait Photography. It was taken on a D100, a 6-megapixel camera with Nikon's 35-70mm f2.8 push-pull zoom. It's an old lens, but really sharp. And the reason the image reproduces so well on the book is because it was bang in focus. I shot, I think, at f8, which is the sweet spot for that lens. And the quality of the light you get from this octa is simply sublime. That, and then coupled with the mood on the little boy's face, all shot in someone's study with no studio at all. So does that answer the question? Well, not really, because clearly I do own a studio and we're very successful owning a studio. But would I say that you had to have one? No, I wouldn't. Would I say it's good to have one? Yes, I would. But not for the reasons that possibly you're thinking. Mostly, it gives you versatility. It gives me options that a client now never cancels. When we didn't have a studio, if it was wet, either myself or the client invariably would postpone the session. And when you rely on that coming through, that business coming through, that's really hard. It's really hard to take the cash hit when, yes, all right, you know that you'll get the job in the end, but you are delayed on getting the cash flow through. So I think it's a solid choice, but it's an investment. You really do have to pour both money and time and practice into it. It's not the same as shooting outdoors, though my lighting is very similar because that's how I learned. I learned photographing in available light out in the environment. And of course, all of my lighting patterns now, broadly speaking, reflect my experience at photographing in daylight. I'm having to learn how to do all of these different things, or I've had to learn over the years how to do all these different things that I never set out to do. But it's reaped for us huge benefit. I'm a better photographer outdoors because of my understanding of studio light. I'm a much better photographer indoors because, well, I'd never done it before, and so I couldn't be any worse. I love studio photography now in a way that I never did. And now our postponement rate with clients because of wet weather is almost zero. And that is a really good justification for having a studio space. If for nothing else, it's good for your business. Of course, it's good for creativity too. You can do images that you really can't do outside. But for an awful lot of things, you can do them in people's homes. You can do it out in the street. I have some beautiful pictures where we've just slung a background up in daylight and used daylight as a studio light. It's not a studio portrait, but it's got a nice neutral background because I've put a paper background up. So there are lots of options. You don't have to have one. I do think it's useful, and I, for one, thoroughly enjoy having it. So I hope that answers that particular question. And on that happy note, I'm going to keep this podcast reasonably short as it is Father's Day. I've had a lovely one so far. My kids made a real fuss of me in spite of Harriet being away in America for the next 9 weeks. Before she left, she had made the most beautiful card, as had our son Jake. And it's just lovely to wake up in the morning to lovely presents, two beautiful handmade cards, an awful lot of sentiment and an awful lot of joy. And I'm going to cut this off at that stage. I'm going to go home. We're going to open a bottle of Italian wine. I think it's an Italian night. And I'm going to have a lovely evening with Jake, our son, Sarah, my missus, and we'll text Harriet. We'll text Harriet in West Virginia, and hopefully she'll respond, and it'll just make my Father's Day perfect. So for all of you out there, if you're fathers, I hope you're having a lovely day. If you're photographers, I hope you're being creative and having the best of it. But until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.